Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council, Boudreaux's Electrical Services, Sunshine Quality Solutions, Super Chevy Dealers, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo. This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Tiger Rag Radio. I'm Jeff Palermo, News and Sports Director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the Executive Editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, Glenn Gilbo, who is our editor, and then Andre Champagne, our producer. Lot to get to here on this Tuesday night. We'll talk some LSU baseball. That's the biggest thing going on right now after the Tigers lost to Northeastern on Monday. Got a big game on Wednesday night over in Lafayette, and then their final non-conference weekend series coming up against Sacramento State. All of a sudden, LSU's offense is in a funk. We'll talk about that and some of the other issues with the LSU baseball team. We'll talk some basketball. The LSU Lady Tigers getting ready to play in the SEC tournament. We'll most likely face Oklahoma on Friday, possibly South Carolina on Saturday. Charlie Cream, ESPN Women's College Basketball Bracketologist, he'll join us in hour number two. And we got to talk some gymnastics as well. Kaylin Chio has been unbelievable this season for the LSU gym squad. That's ranked second in the country. The voice of LSU gymnastics, you hear him inside the Maravich Center. Over 13,000 filled the PMAC on Friday night to watch LSU defeat third-ranked Alabama. And we'll talk to Mike Smith coming up in hour number two. And we'll get into some other topics as well. But, guys, a lot going on, and we don't even have spring football yet, so it's only going to get more crazy.
It'll be here before you know it.
It certainly will. It certainly will. But one of the more important issues.
Real quick, let me ask. Okay. I wonder if when spring football starts, if Lane is going to tweet less because he's busier. Do you think his tweets will go down?
No, I think it'll go up because he'll have more information to share.
It seems like it's gone down, unless I'm just missing it on my feed. Hasn't he been a little
he's been tweeting pretty much two or three times a day, every day.
Let me give you a strategy. Go to TigerRag.com. Twice a week, we break down the highlights of Lane's tweets.
I've done two of them. I'm going to be doing regular stories on Lane's tweets. But, you know, it's funny. His cover on his Twitter is his daughter, Landry, saying Lane Kiffin tweets too much. And Lane has said in a couple of interviews since he became LSU's coach that he does it too much and he might ought to stop.
Yeah.
But he doesn't stop. He keeps doing it, and they're all pretty funny and interesting.
Yep.
So it's just going to – I wonder if you'll, like, put stuff, like, during spring, like, well, Leavitt is third on the depth chart right now or something like that. Because what I'm hearing, we're not going to have a lot of access.
Yeah, that might be the only access we get. and, of course, he did a TikTok video with Livy Dunn on Friday night. So that was a little – I really don't like TikTok. Hey – good for both of them.
And then he had a tweet about, I had forgotten about this, Joe Burrow's dad, Jimmy Burrow, was a DB at Nebraska, and I did a big feature on him because he was the MVP of the Sugar Bowl back in the early 70s, and then his son played in the Sugar Bowl for the national championship. But I didn't realize that at the time, Monty Kiffin was his defensive coordinator at Nebraska, and Lane tweeted out a picture of Monty, his dad, jumping into the arms of Jimmy Burrow, Joe Burrow's dad. So that was a pretty cool tweet, too.
And Jimmy Burrow, I guess on the basis of Lane's tweet, talked about how Lane Kiffin was his mentor and idol. Monty Kiffin was his mentor.
Right, exactly.
But Lane Kiffin is a perfect coach for LSU at this stage.
Yeah, Jimmy Burrow's a cool guy. I did a lot on him when Joe was here, but that's interesting that there's a connection between the Burrows and the Kiffins.
All right. The latest issue of Tiger Rag magazine is out. It's one of the more important issues, and really every year the Tiger Rag does a money issue, and you can look in there and see how much everyone makes and this and that. But it seems with money being such a prominent word around LSU athletics, when you're talking about Brian Kelly's buyout, you're talking about NIL, you're talking about revenue sharing, you're talking about Lane Kiffin's contract, Matt McMahon, whether to buy him out or not, Jay Johnson.
Brian Kelly's buyout.
Yeah. Money has become such an important – it's always been part of college athletics, but no more so than now. And it's really turning things. And if you haven't seen some of the articles that have already been posted up at TigerRag.com, certainly check them out and inform yourself. A lot of this is, you know, I know a lot of sports fans, they just really want to worry about who wins and loses, right? You know, did we win? Did we lose? Why did we win? Why did we lose? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, let me say this, Jeff. This magazine was laid out expertly by Todd and Jake McMaines, our graphics person. It's really easy to read, even though it's not sports, like you're saying. It's more business and stuff that turn a lot of people off, but it's really an easy read the way it's broken down. And Todd did an excellent job on several of the stories in there, and it's in a way that you can understand it.
And I feel like we're at a crossroads right now, because there's talk about expanding the college football playoffs, this revenue sharing. This is the first year. It's only going to go up from here. Do you get any guardrails on NIL? The president has is it this Friday, Todd, that the president's commission that
Saban
with Nick Saban is on there to talk about how to control college athletics. There's discussion of moving away from the individual conference TV contracts and just bundling it all up together. So there's so many facets of this. It makes your head spin.
Yes.
But I think all LSU fans should educate themselves on this to understand how complex and dynamic and how – you know, what's the future of LSU athletics? Because so many big decisions are going to be made here over the next few months that's going to affect the athletic program, Todd.
Right, and this is fairly complicated. So I'm going to try to do this as simply as possible, because that's what we try to do in this issue. You know, we looked at this and we said, how can we make this simple, understandable? Because it's very complex.
Yes.
And you just alluded to it. So I looked around, talked to the staff, talked with Glenn, talked with other people. And actually, we've been working on this for months, because what you just described is the end of an era. Okay, 2025, in fact, fiscal year 2025, not just for LSU, but for all of college sports, because college football is the cash cow for college sports. All right, all of that ended in 2025. And I don't think it's unbold to say that we went from an amateur model to a professional model.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's all kinds of considerations, and you mentioned some of them, that are just breaking right now. What we tried to do with this issue, and by the way, you can get the digital issue if you can't pick up the print copy. There is a digital issue online at TigerRag.com. And several of these stories have been published on TigerRag.com as regular web articles.
It's on the right side. You just click on the cover.
Right.
God bless you.
So, thank you. So you can see it all, but it really we wanted to point specifically to the end of an era and to all the questions and LSU's position as it enters this new era. And Glenn and I sat down with Verge for several hours and went in depth to the budget, what was being reported previously, what was really happening. And there's a lot of breaking information inside of this long, what's called a long form story. Go ahead.
And I think what Verge said that I think is the most significant is, and Jay Johnson actually said the same thing several weeks before when we interviewed him in his office, is that schools are going to have to decide what sports they're going to be great at, what sports they have to be great at, what sports they're going to be good at, and what sports they're going to be not so good at, because they can't fund all the sports in an effort to win a national championship and everything like Skip used to do. And Skip really had, across the board, he had the best athletic programs overall for the longest span when he was AD. And as Verge told us, and it's in the magazine, you know, those days are over. They got to be good in football. They have to be good in football. But they're putting off men's basketball, which is probably why Matt McMahon's going to keep his job, and they'll maybe try to be good at that next year if the football team does good, because they'll make more money. And, you know, that's how it's going to work. And then there's other programs that have decided, you know what, we can't win a national championship in football. South Carolina, Arkansas, Kentucky. So they're going to put their money in another sport. South Carolina, Mississippi State, they can't win a championship in football. They're going to put their money in baseball. And that's a threat to Jay, because they're going to have more money donated to their baseball roster than Jay has. And Jay talks about that.
And that's just one of the dynamics that are going on. And you mentioned some, and I know you wanted to say something, and I don't want to interrupt you, but just today and yesterday, they were talking about consolidating the rights. There's a meeting in Dallas going on, and we have a column up right now where we're trying to explain what's the difference between the Dallas meeting and what the difference is between the Washington meeting on Friday with President Trump. It's all about stabilizing the system, and there's two different ways that they're basically looking at it. Are they going to consolidate the rights, or will the SEC and the Big Ten be a duopoly, so to speak, not a monopoly, but a duopoly, and emerge as the power in this? And that's what's really happening right now. Either way, LSU is going to be okay, even though they're facing their largest major deficit ever, which we were the first to report on.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, and no offense to our friends over at The Advocate, but the stories that I think a lot of LSU fans have seen, or at least especially the headlines, LSU football had a record profit of $67 million.
And they did.
And the school ended up with a surplus of nearly $4 million.
And that's true.
And there have been other articles like that, you know, in 24 and 23 talking about, but this dives so much deeper into the looming financial headaches that are coming down the road here for LSU.
It does, and it the reason for that is because the Advocate and most other media, in fact, I hadn't seen this anywhere, all they did was report on what happened in 2025. They didn't take into account what will be the case in 2026.
And what LSU owes.
Right.
$54 million to Kelly.
And
not all at
and
once.
To his assistant coaches.
Yeah,
they had to let
yeah.
go. And all that. So that whole thing paints a big picture. Plus the revenue share, as you mentioned, is kicking in for the first time in fiscal 2026. So that's $20.5 million out of that money that they bring in that they have to allocate. And it's going to go up to 22 million next year. So there's all kinds of different things that we tried to present to make clear and sit down with Verge Osbury and break it down. And I think we actually did a really good job of bringing all those dynamics together. So now you can read this and really understand what not only LSU is facing, but the entire sports world in college, and why, whenever they meet in Dallas to talk about consolidating media rights, why that's important, and why when they meet with the president and his counsel this Friday in Washington, why that's something else they're looking at as an option. But I want to reiterate, LSU under Verge Osbury right now is in very good hands and will be okay.
Let me stop you there. We'll explain why LSU will be in good hands regardless of what happens with some of these major decisions that need to be made. Let's take our first break here on Tiger Rag Radio as we are live from the Super Chevy Dealer Studios.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me. Home with LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
We love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, we're going to get to plenty of baseball talk later on in this hour. Charles Handegriff and Ronnie Rantz, they will both join us to talk about the Tigers as they got a big game Wednesday night against UL Lafayette. The latest issue of Tiger Rag magazine, it's the money issue. Tiger Rag does a money issue every year, but this one I think is the most important money issue they've ever done just because of what we talked about in the last segment about the changing dynamics of college athletics, moving from an amateur model to now basically a professional model. And the title of the magazine, or this edition of the magazine, is Inside the Fiscal Fight. And we were talking before the break about Todd was saying that regardless of what happens, there's a fork in the road at the moment, and depending on which way they go, LSU will be in a good position. But for anyone that wants to really, you know, get into the weeds on this thing, and not to say that Todd's writing's complicated or anything like that, but it dives into some issues that you've probably are not aware of, and it kind of shows how all of this is connected. It's the title of it. If you go to TigerRag.com, it's called Who Controls the Future of College Football? And Todd, you were saying in the last segment that LSU is positioned well, and based on, and I actually sped read through this column that you just put out as I was eating my dinner tonight. The way I got it was a lot of it is because of LSU's brand, and the value of LSU's brand will allow it to survive whatever the future of college athletics looks like.
Yeah, because what it's going to come down to, and this is what the column talks about, is it's either going to be the SEC and the Big Ten as a duopoly controlling the future of college football, including the media rights, the licensing rights, everything that you can think of that has anything to do with generating revenue for college football, or it's going to be they're pooled together and they have one license and it incorporates a 1961 act. But either way, because of the strength of LSU's brand is now the fourth highest valued brand in all of sports, in all of college sports, at $1.5 billion. What's interesting is that at $1.5 billion brand valuation, they're facing their largest deficit ever. So, but that's because of the nuances with Brian Kelly and what have you. But either way, LSU is at the top of the totem pole, so to speak, in either axis or either polar opposite that occurs, whichever way they go. So LSU is going to be fine. And in fact, LSU is dictating a lot of this and will have a lot of power and leverage in what actually happens.
In your article, you talk about how LSU is facing a potential $25 to $35 million deficit next fiscal year. How do they make that money up? Is it they're just banking on a huge season from football?
Yes.
Well, that's one way. But they also have a, and Glenn talked about this on other radio shows earlier this week, but that, you know, the badges on the jerseys, all the jerseys, they've come up with creative ways to generate revenue. And that's a new revenue that used to not be allowed. And there are a lot of people, a lot of fans that I have heard say, oh, I don't want to see emblems on the field. I don't want to see logos on jerseys. I think when you read this article, read this piece, you'll understand why that's necessary.
Yeah, and it's not going to be like NASCAR.
Right, and it doesn't have to be, because part of the reason LSU is going to be okay is because LSU's brand is so valuable to corporate partners.
Woodside Energy.
Woodside Energy.
That's a
Nike,
huge deal.
All these partners. I mean, it doesn't matter who those partners are. They value LSU's brand almost above everybody else because LSU has great television ratings. Not because they're in the SEC. That helps. But what it matters is it's LSU. It's almost like the SEC needs LSU more than LSU needs the SEC. And in fact, that's what this is really going to come down to. It's going to be, you know, which side LSU may end up choosing. Are they going to choose the SEC or are they going to choose that? Now, I'm not trying to say that LSU is looking to get out of the SEC because that's nowhere near what I'm talking about. I'm saying which is the best way for the sport to go.
Basically, where the SEC and Big 12 continue to, or Big 12, SEC and the Big 10 control everything?
Right.
Or do we split it up and allow
right.
the Big 12 and the ACC to get more right. of the money? But the SEC's point of view is we're the ones carrying the water here. Why should we care what Colorado gets?
That's exactly what it is. And in fact, the SEC and the Big 12 issued a white paper today saying, hey, all this stuff that they're talking about in Dallas, that just needs to like go bye-bye.
Yeah.
But that's not decided, and it won't be decided. What the sport needs more than anything else, and what Virg Ausberry points out very clearly in this edition of Tiger Rag and on TigerRag.com, is the system's broke.
Yes.
And it's not sustainable. Okay, LSU's not the only one facing major expenses for the first time. In fact, they all are. And they have to figure out not only new creative ways to generate revenue internally, but they need to get their licensing act together and get more money because television is great for LSU and SEC and college football.
Let's take another break. When we come back, we'll get to the discussion on the field. The LSU baseball team, tough loss Monday night against Northeastern. How did the Tigers get out of this funk? We'll get to that and much more here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a 4th-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Let's go! Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Hey, we're back here on Tiger Rag Radio as we continue to roll on. Let's get into some baseball talk with Charles Hanegriff. You can hear him every day, Monday through Friday on ESPN 104.5 and 104.9 as him and Jimmy Ott during the lunch hours on those stations. Talk sports, talk gambling, all that kind of fun stuff. Talk LSU baseball as well. And Charles joins us now. Charles, thanks a lot for spending a few minutes with us tonight. How you doing?
Doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I am doing well. Doing well. Hey, I know that we spent the first, or so far the first 30 minutes of the show talking about Tiger Rag Magazine's money issue. And I know you had a chance to look at some of the reporting that Tiger Rag has done on the fiscal issues facing LSU. What were some of your main takeaways from it?
Well, the challenges that Virg Ausberry and his department are going to have to fund everything they want to fund. It's just different things that you're funding now. It's always been a problem for athletics. You know, how can you raise more money? It used to be the facilities race, and now it's more about players and coaches' salaries, I guess, especially the players' salaries, you know, revenue share, if you will. And they've got some real decisions that they're going to have to make. I also, you know, the word that kept coming up was brand an awful lot. And I understand the emphasis on football. I get it. There's nobody that says that football is not the driving economic engine of this or any other SEC athletic department. But when you talk about the brand was built by, you know, a lot of other people that didn't play football. you know, Paul Skeens and Livy Dunn and Angel Reese and Flauje Johnson and Mondo Duplantis and Sam Burns and, you know, of course, Alex Bregman. I mean, I could go on and on. There's a lot of people that are involved in that brand that are not football players. So I thought it was interesting. They've got a lot of decisions to make.
Well, let's go to baseball.
Yeah, let's talk a little baseball. Charles, what was your thoughts on last night's game, 13-10 loss to Northeastern, and just where this team is offensively? Every team goes through a funk offensively. I think what raises a little bit of a red flag was the competition at LSU's really struggled to get big innings, put up crooked numbers on the scoreboard. It seemed to come at ease those first eight games of the season, and now all of a sudden it's become a real struggle. What do you think is behind that?
Well, I wish I could tell you it's any one thing. It's been a lot of what you call giveaway at-bats over the last five games, those bats where you're not competitive, you're not grinding, you're not looking for the pitch that you can drive. You're falling behind. You're taking pitches you should swing at and swinging the pitches you should take. I wish I could tell you how to fix it. I wish I could tell you it was any one thing. Or there was a lineup change you could make that would, you know, get you out of this thing, or, you know, redo your pregame routines or something. There's all kinds of things you can do with a slump. But mostly it was just the lack of intensity, the lack of focus that you've seen over the last five games. And it was really apparent in the seventh inning last night when Jay Johnson emptied his bench. And you saw an immediate change in, I thought, the intensity, the demeanor. I realized they were playing from way behind and they had nothing to lose. But, man, all of a sudden you saw that enthusiasm, that fire come back that's kind of been missing for the last few games.
Charles, do you think two questions, I guess. Do you think that part of the problem has been they've played so much, so many games over the last 2 weeks that maybe they're just tired? And do you think that maybe the quality of pitching is not up to par with what they're used to facing in terms of speed and maybe good command, but not enough speed, and they're having to adjust to slower pitching? I've heard both of those things.
I don't buy the first one. You know, you're 13 games deep into a season that's going to run into the 60s or 70s. These are young kids. We're not talking about making them play five games in 3 days or something like that. So, no, I don't buy the first one. The second one, maybe a little bit, that the off-speed pitching has given them problems. That's been a problem for big swinging teams of LSU in the past. They would light up the hard-throwing righty, but the soft-throwing lefty might give them some problems. Maybe a little bit of that. It doesn't explain everything, but I think maybe a little bit of that.
What about the pitching situation, especially last night?
I think you've got three really good starters. I think you've got probably three or four really good relievers, two of which are pitching at the level that they're capable of, and a couple that right now probably aren't. But I feel pretty good about where their pitching is. And I didn't do them any good to have Cooper Williams and Zach Cowan get hit last night the way they did. I thought with Williams, it was more of a defensive lapse that kind of got him unnerved. But Cowan was hit hard, and he was an important piece for them a year ago. I think both of those guys are capable of way more than what their current numbers give you. And I think, you know, Maverick Rizzi has come around. Gavin Guidry has come back stronger from that year off than you could have ever possibly hoped at the beginning. And Devin Sheeran is a real classic closer, hard fastball, really sharp breaking pitches, a lot of strikeouts, can come in and get you out of a jam. So I feel pretty good about where their pitching is right now. I think it's going to take Kasen Evans a little bit longer to kind of get comfortable, completely comfortable in that Friday night role. That's always a tough transition.
Are any concern, and I know it's early, Charlie, that, you know, Cooper Williams was supposed to be that, you know, that left-hander, at least especially early on, considering he was on the team last year, a left-hander that Jay can trust, can bring him in a tough situation, a dirty inning, he can get out of it. But so far we haven't been able to see that. Any concern that really we haven't seen a left-hander show any kind of consistency out of LSU's pitching staff?
Well, with Williams, Certainly you wish you would have gotten off to a cleaner start. But, again, I thought last night the defense kind of unnerved him. You had over at first base, you didn't have your usual first baseman. You had John Pearson, who made a play on a ball that really should have been the second baseman's ball. So there's a runner on it shouldn't be. That doesn't go up as an error on the scoreboard, but that's an error. And then Williams gets a little unnerved with that, and so he uncorks a throw to first base that, you know, gives him another free base. And there was another error in the inning after that. And I think it kind of snowballed on him a little bit. He's not walking a lot of people so far. The strikeout number is still there. I like Cooper Williams a lot. I think there's been more unfortunate for him, especially last night, than getting really hit hard. Where for Cowan, though, I would say the other way. Yeah. Cowan has been hit very hard.
Talking with Charlie Hanegriff as we wrap things up. Charlie, you've been watching LSU baseball for a long time. If Case and Evans and Cooper Moore and William Schmidt pitch to their level, is that the best weekend rotation LSU's ever had?
Oh, I'm not ready to go there. In 2009, you had the SEC Pitcher of the Year pitching on Saturday. LSU's had first round picks pitching on Saturday before. No, I'm not ready to go there. I think that this is a great group. Last year's 1-2 punch was as good as it got. When you had Poche and Lang, that was really good. Coogan, and Thompson were really good in 97. So I'm not ready to go there.
And Charles, I would say Ben McDonald, Russell Springer, and Curtis Laskanik on the same rotation, too. That was a strong
one. I believe that Chad Ogé was on that staff.
Yes.
As a freshman. And one more. And who am I for? There's one more.
O'Donohue? James O'Donohue?
I thought it might have been a little bit after O'Donohue. You said Russ Springer, and you said
Laskanik.
Paul Byrd.
Paul Byrd was there, too. Yeah, that was that 89-91.
That was a good staff.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
You guys talked all about pitching through the years, and you didn't mention Paul Skeens.
Floyd.
Paul Skeens, and when Ty Floyd came behind him and struck out 17, that was pretty good, too.
All right, well, we'll see how it goes, Charlie. We'll let you go on that. Thanks, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Ronnie Rance will join us next here on Tiger Rag Radio. Speaking from the Super Chevy pitchers. Dealer Studios. We'll be back after this.
Sorry about that.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
All right, still efforting Ronnie Rance. By the way, if you missed any of the show or want to listen back to it, you can always catch us wherever you get your podcast or up on YouTube. The show gets posted there. We'll continue the baseball talk. Jay Johnson had a lot of interesting things to say after Monday night's loss to Northeastern. Talked about some of the growing pains that the program or this team is going through a little bit here with suffering its second loss. And Coach Johnson hoping that could be turned into a good learning lesson.
There's a little bit of growing pains for this team. You know, I'm not going to single out player or anything like that, but there's some growing pains that we're going through that, if used correctly, will help us be what we want to be.
I'm not going to single out any player, but I'm going to replace Derek Curiel first.
Yeah, you noticed yesterday he pinch hit for Curiel against a right-hander. You know, Curiel's had trouble with left-handers. He didn't do it for that reason. And Jay also made a cryptic comment last night. He was talking about the young players that came in late in the game, and he said they weren't worried about their batting average.
Well, this is the thing with Curiel. We're not really seeing it with Jake Brown, but Stephen Milam, too, I think you see it with. And you've seen this with a lot of other players that have played at LSU. When it is your draft year, the pressure, I think, grows on you individually. And some guys really struggle with that.
Bregman did, too.
Bregman struggled with it.
Alex Bregman, by the way.
I was listening to Matt Moscona's show. I don't know. It wasn't recent, but I know that I've heard Ryan Terrio talk about how he got off to a really rough start his draft year, and then eventually it got to the point where he was like, well, just screw it. I'm just going to go out there and be who I am, and then eventually turn. But there is the pressure to put up the numbers when it is your draft year.
Right.
And I also think having Stanfield as your leadoff hitter and putting Curiel at number two might help Derek out a little bit.
Well, Derek has been batting number two.
There's been times he's been the leadoff guy too.
Yeah, but the last several games he's been.
He also had the stomach flu, and even though he did get the big RBI double on Friday night, we all know that has an effect on you for a little bit more than just a couple of days. So.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
But I think Curiel has been. I think he's been fine.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to single him out. It just made sense since he was the guy that was first pinch hit for, and it was against a right-hander. But anyway, what I think the biggest concern is right now? Defense.
Well, I think a lot of that gets shored up once you get Stanfield back.
See, I don't think it's so much in the outfield.
But the second base is an issue.
Yeah.
And when you're doing shifts and you're trying to put Steven Milam anywhere in the infield to be you think the ball is going to be hit
to cover up
exactly the defensive lapses at second base. Hey, if Jack Ruckert all of a sudden starts swinging the bat well, he might be your starting second baseman before the end of the season.
He made an error last night too.
Yeah, he did make a bad error.
I think the biggest issue is the hitting. They're hitting .207 in their last six games. In the three games over the weekend and the McNeese game, they had single-digit hits after having double-digit hits all year. And that's the main thing Jay has been concerned with. He said over the weekend, I'm coaching hitters this weekend,
right.
and they didn't, and they kept not hitting.
They never
produced. And then he started talking last night about changing the lineup. They're not hitting the ball. That's the main thing.
But I think they have good hitters, and I think they will come around at some point. But I do think that the defense. I mean, you have four errors in a game, and you have four wild pitches. There's no way you're going to win any game.
Yeah. But the hitting is really standing out, and I think something that's happened historically as well. Sometimes you get some of these transfers in from schools that don't take baseball quite as seriously. Like, I mean, they got players from High Point and Grand Canyon, you know. And I'm not singling out those players, but they're not quite used to how it's done at LSU or SEC programs, because Jay Johnson runs his team like a major league team, and so does other SEC teams. So I think there's an adjustment period for some of those transfers, particularly the older transfers that come in as juniors and seniors who are kind of set in their ways. They got to change.
And I agree it's an adjustment period for anybody who's coming in trying to acclimate to the program, but I guarantee you Jay Johnson vetted them on what he thought that they would be able to fit into that and adjust to that. So maybe it's taken them a little bit longer to adjust to it.
There's also the bubble of playing at LSU. It's something that, you know, for the kid at Trent Carraway, for the Zach Yorks, Braden Simpson, Seth Dardar, it is something they have never experienced before. And it's intense.
Right.
I mean, they're on Saturday afternoon, I mean, there were 10,000 fans watching LSU play Northeastern in baseball.
Yeah, and they're not used to that.
Wednesday night's environment in Lafayette is going to be crazy. There's not going to be anything like it. And it's different, and some guys rise to the occasion, and other guys get, I don't want to say intimidated, but it shakes their nerves there for a little bit until they can get used to it.
And they try to do too much.
Here's a question. Do you think this acclimation period, adapting to the environment and the crowd here in the preseason, is going to be helpful for the whole team when the newcomers, when the SEC starts?
Well, I think that's why
a whole nother level.
I think that's why you jam 18 games in before conference play starts.
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Yeah,
and I think he and some of these teams are probably going to end up with much better RPIs than they have now. Like Northeastern was at 205 last night. Some of those will improve as the season goes on, but I do wish he would play one weekend series against a brand name baseball program at home or away.
Sacramento State's not doing it for
you. No. And that's another one that may rise up. And Kent State is already 41 in RPI. LSU is in the 70s, I think, in RPI right now.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our baseball discussion for this hour here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Let's go.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
LSU just had a 3-2 homestand where the offense just really wasn't there for much of it, except for those last few innings against Northeastern as the Tigers tried to come back from a 10-run deficit and got within three, but eventually lost at a Huskies 13-10. LSU has played, as of Monday night, that was their 13th game in 17 days. And we talked to Charlie Hanegriff about it, and he dismissed the idea of the team being tired. But I've seen a bunch of losing streaks in my lifetime. I'm a Cubs fan. I feel like I'm an expert on 7, 8, 9, 10 game losing streaks. And I've seen them, and I know I can dissect them and all that kind of stuff. But and I know when a team's not hitting, they kind of look lethargic and so forth. But I feel like this team is a little bit mentally fried a little for whatever reason, because I don't remember weekends where you had, he's done it two out of the three weekends so far. You play Friday, Saturday, Monday, you know, four consecutive days of baseball on the college level. And it's just not the 3-hour game. Heck, some of these games are going 4 hours. It's the pregame. It's the batting practice. It's the grounders. The story about Zach York and Stephen Milam in the batting cages late on Saturday night at 9:30 after a 2 o'clock game.
Well, that's because they go 2 for 24.
But
over.
maybe instead of and Jay said, okay, that I know these guys are their heart and their mind is in the right spot, but maybe he should have told them, you know what, guys, go home for the night. We got to be back here for a 12:30 game the next day.
Yeah, I don't know. I
understand they're 19, 20, 21, and it's not a grueling sport, but.
Well, one thing Jay said last night.
Well, let's hear the soundbite.
Oh, okay.
Let's hear the soundbite. Andre was here's his. You know which one this one.
Four.
Cut four here, Andre.
A team that was 47-9 in here. Like, I decided to play four games in a row. You know, so maybe it's on me for setting the schedule up the way that I did. If you really want to be honest about it, I think if we use it correctly, it can and will help us, you know, but we all collectively have to make a decision to use what happened in the game tonight to propel us forward.
So there's him talking a little bit about it. Maybe there is a little bit of an effect here.
Well, I'll say this. Do you remember the comments that the Notre Dame coach made in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
When he said that he'd never seen a team with that type of discipline, that they're not swinging.
Right.
You know, well, they've gotten away from that.
Yes.
And that's what Charles was referring to, I think.
These guys are they're and Cade Aaron Beatty said it last night. They haven't been good with two strikes. And last night, it was in the seventh or eighth inning, the pitcher they brought in could not throw the ball over the plate.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there saying, take, and you'll walk the bases loaded. And they left the bases loaded. You know,
yeah.
They weren't disciplined enough to not swing, so they've gotten away from that.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some women's basketball. Lady Tigers getting ready for the SEC tournament, even though Kim Mulkey hates the tournament. We'll talk about that with Charlie Cream from ESPN. So stay tuned for that here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.